Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to News Crunch, a new monthly segment on At Home with Victoria. Join TV journalist and news lady Victoria Gaither, along with her smart, witty, and colorful guests as they crunch newsmakers and stories while putting their own spin on issues. Here's Victoria.
Well, a very good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for taking the time to join me this evening. You guys know it's very rare that I do a show on Friday, but like many of you, I'm a news junkie. I'm a journalist. That's what I do, so I've been following the news, and if you have been watching the news, I know it's been very difficult for you guys to escape this huge story out of Penn State, the abuse scandal. And, I was kind of, watching the story. In fact, when our main guest who's going to be here in a moment, who's actually on the line now, Jerry, who is a sports journalist and also an adjunct professor, I was thinking about him because I've been watching so much ESPN this week. I have never in my life watched more ESPN than I have in the past 3 or 4 days to kind of take a look at this whole Penn State scandal from a sports perspective, just to kind of get a grip and an idea on how this can happen, and also what the sports world, the writers, and what folks like Jerry does thinking about this and covering it. And it really wasn't until a friend of mine who is a reporter at the WUSA in D.C., had on her wall the posting. She decided to post the court documents and the affidavit where you have the opportunity to read every single thing that was taking place. And probably by the time that I got to the fifth page, I thought, you have got to be kidding me. So then I said, well, you know what, we've got to get on the air. There are many, many voices out there. And you know how much I love you guys, and we've got about 70,000 fans that follow us, so I wanted us to do our own story on it. Started to figure out, you know, who can I get on? And Jerry is somebody that I met through the National Black Media Association in Baltimore. We all kind of know each other, and he has done sports his entire life. And I thought, you know what, Jerry would be a good person to come on and kind of give us the 411 and just kind of, you know, help us understand what's going on and sort of what went wrong. What was also very cool about Jerry was he actually had a piece on today that he's going to talk about where he wrote and actually talked about the sex scandal. So with that said, let's go ahead and bring Jerry in on the conversation. Jerry, I've never watched so much more ESPN than in my whole life.
Yeah, you know, it's been a busy week. Not even just ESPN. If you look at CNN or NBC, everybody was going with this story. This was a huge story. In a news week, there were a lot of big stories, but, you know, this is just a massive sex scandal, and it's, you know, the bottom line why it's so big is that a lot of the abuse that happened in this situation didn't have to happen. There were signs early on as much as 13, 14 years ago that something was going on, and no one stepped in and did anything about it.
Well, and you know, what is very, very interesting about this situation as well, I'm sure there are a lot of issues and thoughts and ideas that you can actually tease out of it. But it wasn't until I had the opportunity to read those court documents that I just felt like there were so many opportunities. There were so many times when somebody really, you know, should have stepped up to the plate and actually said, hey, enough is enough, and this is actually what's going on. But, I kind of feel like nobody really, you know, obviously really did that, because we wouldn't be where we are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the indictment came last Friday, and I happened to read the documents on Saturday. And like you said, when you read it, you said you got to page five. It was one of the most disturbing documents that I've ever read in my life. Now, I've spent most of my years as a sports reporter, but I spent the first 7 years of my career as a news reporter covering the police beat in court. So I've seen a lot of crime scenes, and I've heard a lot of cases in court that were just really very disturbing. But the fact that these were kids being abused in the manner that they were, it was just, to me, I just couldn't believe it. So it was the news media was very slow to pick this story up. It was pretty much a regional story throughout the weekend. But by Monday, when the school president said last weekend that he was in support of the vice president and athletic director who were also indicted, I said, you know what, he has to go. And, you know, and then the coach has to go because there were so many people covering up what was going on with the allegations against Coach Jerry Sandusky.
Yeah, you're right. And also what I thought was interesting about the whole situation when you said at first it was really a regional story, because it was kind of like you heard, if you watched the news like me, you heard a little bit about it, but, you know, it's kind of like, oh, this was a sex scandal, and then you heard his name. But it was kind of like, okay, and like you said, there were obviously so many other things in the news with the Republicans, the elections going on, you know, Occupy Wall Street. I mean, sort of take your pick, Michael Jackson trial. So you've got
Herman
all
Cain,
these other
topics.
Yeah, Herman Cain, right, and his, you know, the problems he's going through. And I swear he's probably thinking, why in the world did I even ever want this job? But that's a different story. But what was interesting about that was that I kind of think that when people like you and people started to read those documents, it just really kind of blew the lid off things. It's kind of like, you've got to be kidding me. You're like, whoa.
Yeah, there have been a lot of scandals in sports before, but people reacted with anger this week, and it was rightfully so. I mean, some friends of mine who aren't even sports fans, I mean, they were livid about what went on. And, you know, it goes to show at major universities where you have these sports programs generating so much income, I believe that Penn State last year generated $72 million a year for that university in revenue.
Mm.
And that was the fifth most of any college in the country. And, you know, you would think that despite that much money, you wouldn't overlook crimes against children, but it seems like that's exactly what happened, that people were thinking about the reputations of Hall of Fame coaches. They were thinking about reputations of a sexual predator, alleged sexual predator. They were thinking about the income, potential income, future income of the university through their football program, and that's why all this cover-up occurred.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of the alleged sexual predator, Jerry Sandusky, for those of you that do not know is his name, and I've been kind of just looking at the news and kind of checking the wires and all that stuff, but to my surprise, he's still out at home, and it's interesting because one of the, I think it was on CNN, they were talking about this, one of the legal analysis guys were saying that it's so interesting the difference between how Sandusky is at home, and then Conrad Murray is actually being locked up, and he talked about what judges do when they decide if you're going to be remanded or if you're going to get out on bail. And I'm just surprised that Sandusky is out because clear, I know one thing that judges look at, and that is if you're a danger to the community. And I'm thinking, I think he's a danger to the community.
Oh, he's a danger to the community. His house sits right behind an elementary school. This elementary school about 200 yards behind his home. So he is definitely a danger to his community. And, yeah, I don't understand it either. This man should be in jail right now. If there's nothing else, he's not convicted yet. They're all allegations still. But just for the amount of victims that were involved here, and who knows how many more victims there are going to be. Who knows how many kids held back what happened to them because they were afraid, because, you know, they knew another kid had reported the abuse and nothing ever happened. The fact that the police were involved in a situation as early as 1998, and it's inexcusable that the police department wouldn't press charges on a situation like this. You know, it could have been a situation where in 2000, by 2000, he could have been arrested and charged, but they let it go. They let the man continue to have access to the university, and, I mean, and he just continue to do the abuse, and sometimes on university grounds.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, and you know, you and I are very much in the business as journalists that whenever we are covering the stories, I mean, we are at our core journalists and we are taught to be objective and to hear both sides of the story. But I have to say, even as a journalist and a human being, this is kind of one of those where you just say, well, you know, being objective is very difficult because, you know, when you sit there and you read the documents, it's just really, really, really difficult. Now, were you surprised with Joe Paterno that they actually let him go?
I was not shocked because Joe Paterno found out early on in this whole process what had happened. And the thing that, for the people who are not sports fans, Jerry Sandusky was considered one of the best coaches in the country in terms of being a defensive coordinator. And he was always known to be the guy that was going to succeed Joe Paterno when he retired. And that's why he stayed around that program so long. He had offers from a lot of different schools to go coach. The University of Maryland was interested in him at some point. But he decided to stay at Penn State because he wanted to be the man to replace Joe Paterno. When the allegations came out in 1998, the first allegation, that's when Joe Paterno was notified about that. Now, the following year, Jerry Sandusky retired from his job. Now, the question is, why would a man at the age of 55 years old, in the prime of his life, there are guys who go into their coaching late into their 70s, why would he step away from a job knowing that he was going to succeed Joe Paterno? And now we know the reason why. I'm sure that at some point he was forced out of the situation, that Penn State said, you know what, you cannot coach here anymore. But when they said you cannot coach here anymore, they should have also said that you can't be here anymore, and that's not what happened. Right. When he retired, they gave him an office. They gave him keys to the building. They gave him access to all the facilities. And this is, and a lot of the crimes happen on Penn State's campus.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It is, like I said, one of those things where you're just kind of like with your mouth open, literally shaking your head. Another thing that I wanted you to talk about, and I've been kind of following it a little bit, and this was, I think at the time, McCurry was a graduate student, and I know he's a coach, or you can probably explain that better, but if you read the document, it's very clear that he saw an incident with a kid and Sandusky in a shower in the bathroom. He went and told Paterno. So there's some sort of conflict between Paterno, I guess, saying that, you know, he didn't really describe it to me the way that that it is in there. But whatever it is and how that went, I know McCurry apparently went to call his father to say sort of what should I do, and then his father went with him to talk to Coach Paterno at the time. But I know a lot of people are still sort of up at arms because he was not dismissed from his job. I did hear that he's now on administrative leave.
He's on leave. Up until this morning, he was expected to be at the game this weekend, but he's on administrative leave. There have been a lot of threats against him. And, you know, I'm trying to put myself in his shoes now. Here's a guy. He was a graduate assistant, which is basically you're an assistant coach on a graduate level who at some point is going to be a full-time staff member with the university. And he was 28 years old, so he wasn't a young guy at 21. But in that situation, you know, you see something, and what he saw in 2002 was Jerry Sandusky allegedly raping a boy as young as 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so you ask yourself this question. If you are a grown man of 28 years old and you see a child being abused in any way, whether it's physical abuse or anything like that, why would you go and call your father and report that to him as opposed to stepping in and stopping the abuse? Now, that's what I don't understand about that at all. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, put yourself in his shoes. And, yeah, I think if I put myself in his shoes, that I would have probably wrecked the coach. I mean, he would have been seriously hurt because you have to save people in that situation. And he had a chance to save that kid. Didn't.
Exactly. No, I completely agree with you on that. For those of you that are just joining us, of course, we're talking about the Penn State scandal. Jerry, who is a sports guy, this is what he does. He follows sports, write about it, talk about it. So he's been kind enough to join us on this Friday evening. And a little bit later on, Jerry, a really good friend of mine, one of my former producers, Sean Seagroves, is going to call in. And Sean's going to really talk about Paterno because he was kind of one of those people from the beginning, you know, sort of when it first hit, that, you know, this guy's just got to go. And what's interesting about Sean is he'll give us a different perspective because he's going to be calling in all the way from the state of Utah. So I thought it would be kind of nice to get a perspective of that. You know, it's just not sort of us here on the East Coast that sort of feels this way, but, you know, this is kind of something universal that people all over feel about. So, Jerry, they've got a game tomorrow. And this was something that I was thinking about when I was preparing for the show tonight that I really wanted to talk to you about because you know the culture of sports. I mean, you're in locker rooms. You know, you're around these guys. What do you think is going to be like for the Penn State football team, like what they're going through right now, and then to have to go on the field and perform tomorrow?
You know, it's going to be a surreal moment for them. These guys have been through the ringer, and it's unfortunate that the team, the players, have to deal with all of what's gone on. But, you know, they've they came to a school where a man has been a coach for parts of six decades, and all of a sudden, in the move happened all of a sudden in a matter of a seven-day period, a four-day period, that man was suddenly ousted, and he's gone, and there's been criticism about your program. And the unfortunate thing about Penn State, they were actually having a good season this year. They were playing great football. And in previous years, Penn State had been a team where people were asking Joe Paterno, when are you going to leave? Because they had been struggling. So they had rebounded this year, and they were playing great football. So at a time where they're back in terms of national prominence, they go through something like this. So I really feel for the kids there. And, it, you know, it just affects the schools on many different levels. It's going to affect the school in terms of recruiting students for the future. You know, if you're a parent now, you know, you have doubts about, okay, my kid is choosing between Penn State and North Carolina. Maybe I'll send them to North Carolina because I don't know what the culture, if the administrators at Penn State are treating their people like this, and I don't want my kid to go and be in that environment. So, it's going to be a really surreal situation for those players when they walk out on the field tomorrow.
And, you know, also, speaking of that, I was watching a little bit of the news, and I realized that some advertisers are starting to pull out. I know CNN's reporting, and I saw it on the AP Wire, that Cars.com has already pulled out from advertising. And also, I think they've got some billboards or something up at the in the stadium, and they're like, you know what? We don't want anything to do with this. We want our ads and stuff down. But Jerry Sean is actually on the line. He's my friend that I was mentioning to you from Utah, and he's a television producer and never shy about his words, so we'll bring him on the conversation. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Vic.
Thank you so much for being here. Jerry's here with us, too.
How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing all right.
Great.
And Sean, I was kind of following your wall during this whole thing, and it was very clear. You thought, it seemed like a while ago, that Paterno, that he just needed to go.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's funny. What's the, and Jerry, you probably could make sure this is right, but what's the slogan that Paterno has, success with honor?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, there's nothing honorable about this. It totally and completely, to me, is hypocritical to say success with honor, but you're, in effect, covering up. I mean, at some point, a week later, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, after he reports this, why doesn't the thought cross his mind, I didn't hear about anything about, you know, Coach Sandusky. Maybe I should follow up. You've worked in the news business. We all work in the news business. When anybody gets accused, just some average Joe off the street, of doing something like this, it's all over the news.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he would have heard something, you know, if it wouldn't have been thrown under the rug.
What's interesting about this story is that I just found out about this whole thing with Jerry Sandusky, over this past week. But the allegations were there a long time ago. There were stories written back in March. I think the Patriot News, which has done great coverage in Harrisburg following this story, they had a story back in March about some grand jury leaks about this investigation. So it became a big regional story back in March. But as recently as last week, Jerry Sandusky was working out in the facility at the football offices.
I don't understand that.
And I don't get that. I mean, you've known for 13, 14 years that this man allegedly assaulted kids. And how do you go in there and work in the same office and get on the treadmill right next to this man and work out with him and look him in the eye? And I'm going to tell you, I've been to games at Penn State. I've been to many football games at Penn State when I worked with the Baltimore Sun to cover their home games. It's a very isolated community. So we all know about small communities that when something happens, everyone knows.
Everybody
and
knows.
So everyone around that program had to know what was going on. It wasn't just confined to the president, athletic director, Joe Paterno, assistant coach. I'm sure that a lot of people on a lot of different levels, I'm sure even some media people had some knowledge of what the allegations were. And I'm just shocked that it was kept quiet for so long.
Yeah.
Well, just one thing that I think out here, too, that maybe you guys aren't – maybe, I don't know, being in – closer to it, but one thing that people really don't get out here isn't not so much, I mean, people don't understand the cover-up and they don't understand why you would do something like that. But more than that, they don't understand why so many people are upset about him being fired. I mean, that's what a lot of people out here don't get, is the thousands of students in the street upset about him being fired. And,
well,
and I really don't understand it
here.
Either.
Yeah, I think, but I mean, I think not only out there, Sean, in Utah where you are, I mean, I know for a fact a lot of people here didn't get that. And what's very cool about the show, in about 10 or 15 minutes, there's a gentleman, a student named Stephen, that is going to call in. And Stephen is actually a student at Penn State, but he's not only a student, he is a reporter at the Daily Collegiate newspaper there on campus. So I'm excited to have him on. So he was actually there that night when they were riding in the streets and they turned the news truck over. So it's going to be interesting for him to kind of, you know, not so much give us his perspective, but kind of talk about what he's been hearing there on campus. And, you know, for us to ask him that question, hey, dude, it's like, you know, what was that all about?
I want to weigh in on that real quickly. I think that part of it is youthful ignorance, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, kids at certain schools, you know, down here in Maryland, University of Maryland, they win a big basketball game, they tend to riot for any reason. So that's just what they do. It's youthful ignorance. But the other reason is that at these major college programs, we are taught to worship the coaches. So when Bobby Knight was at Indiana and was throwing chairs and cursing out media people and choking basketball players, he still had the support of the student body and, to a certain degree, the administration. If you go to Duke with Coach K, to North Carolina with Roy Williams, you can go to any of these major programs, people worship coaches. And I think that we need to shift the emphasis away from worshiping coaches on these situations to being back to more of an academic institution where we are dedicated to teaching students right and wrong. And I think that's the problem with major colleges right now, is that there's a different set of rules for the football program. There's a different set of rules for the coaches, and the coaches have so much power that everything just gets misguided.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that, but I think that's a great point. But still, I live in Provo, which is, you know, kind of similar to State College. It's a smaller community. It's up in the mountains, and, you know, they're crazy about BYU football here. And if something like this happened with one of Coach Mendenhall's, and maybe it's because it's BYU, but I can tell you, if something happened like this with one of Coach Mendenhall's assistants, I mean, he would have been gone in a second. And there would not be students at BYU or the University of Utah, which isn't nearly as predominantly Mormon as BYU, you know, supporting Coach Whittingham, who's the Utah's coach, who's, you know, probably the one of the best coaches in Utah's football history. I just, maybe it's because it's because Utah hasn't had the success. None of the schools have really had the success for as long, and nobody's been there as Coach Paterno. But, I mean, we're talking about kids.
Yeah, I know.
That's what blows my mind is they're saying, oh, yeah, he did what he was legally required to do. In Utah, if he would have done that, he could be facing charges. Because in Utah, you're legally required. We talked about this today on our show. We had BYU's former athletic director on our show, and he said, look, in Utah, if this would have happened, Coach Joe Paterno could be facing charges because it's a crime to not report something like this.
It is. I think there's a possibility that Joe Paterno might face some charges here.
I think he
hired a lawyer this week, but I think that he might face charges. I think that people are so outraged about what went on and about his ignorance and not doing anything about it that I don't think he's completely off the hook and beyond losing his job this week.
Well, and you know, it's just so sad too, because I know that Penn State, I'm sure, besides this, is a wonderful university. I mean, there, you know, what's interesting about it is that because the story is breaking, there, you get to learn like all of the, you know, a lot of leaders within the U.S., whether it's in the business community, congressional, I mean, all different walks of life are alumni of Penn State. So, you know, it's clear it's, you know, it's a good school, and they really do put out some decent students who do some very things, you know, in the world and all of that good stuff. But it's just so sad that something like this, you know, forever is going to ruin the reputation of that university. And the other thing that I want to mention that we haven't talked about was that program that Sandusky was, I think, founded or helped found, the Second Mile. And there was a young man on one of the shows today who was talking about sort of what pedophiles do when they go to look for kids. And he said, you know, clearly you had a case where basically he had a little area where he had all these boys that he could just sort of pluck them at his will whenever he wanted to right there from that program.
Yeah, he had a pipeline. And that's another thing that I think there's going to be more victims that come forward. My mom is a licensed clinical social worker. She's a counselor. And we were talking about this the other day. Do you guys have any idea the number of victims the average child sex offender has?
How many?
Over 100.
Wow.
Wow. So this is, wow. So Sandusky is in his 60s, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
So if he's in his 60s, I mean, it wouldn't shock me to see 10, 15 more people eventually come forward. And And what about this prosecutor that disappeared that was investigating the case and then just nobody's seen him since?
Disappeared in 2005, and he was declared dead last year. So, yeah, he was involved with the case, and just I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's tied to this case. I don't know. It's just a huge mystery.
It's strange.
It's really strange.
Yeah.
And it was funny that there was a guy that they found in Utah maybe 2 weeks ago, and they thought it may have been him, and they ran the picture side by side. And while it looked a little bit like him, it wasn't. But it's just bizarre. I just want to get back to the point of him being involved in this program. You know, it's a very calculating move because these kids with the Second Mile program are all at-risk kids. And I'm sure that a predator like that will try to get with a kid that probably doesn't have a male figure in his life. If there's a male figure in the life of a kid who's being abused, then that male figure might come up and deliver some sort of street justice to the person who's a pedophile in that situation. So,
right.
That's just the way it would go because, if the courts didn't act like they didn't do in this situation, there was a mother of one of the abused kids who had the police in the next room while she spoke to Sandusky at her home, and they heard the entire conversation about him admitting that he showered nude with her son, and they didn't do anything about it. They didn't push that situation to the court system. Now, if you're not going to deliver justice that way, then I think parents will deliver justice in some situations, especially if there's a father involved,
in another way.
Well, and not only that, as sorry, Vic.
Go ahead, Sean. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm not an expert, but I slept in a Holiday Inn last night. as someone whose mother is a professional counselor, so I know enough to be dangerous. And also, just a little bit about my background. My parents have been involved in foster care since before I was born. Until I was 5 years old, my parents ran group homes. We have always had foster kids living with us. I don't have any biological brothers and sisters. I have three foster sisters and a foster brother. So it's more than just he had a pipeline. He had a pipeline of kids with no support system.
Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm.
He had a pipeline of kids who already were exhibiting symptoms of kids who are sexually abused. Withdrawn, don't have a lot of friends, keep to themselves. Those are all things that kids who are molested do, and they were already doing those things.
Yeah, you're right.
So,
good point,
Sean. So even if they are in a situation where they finally are in a home where somebody is, you know, caring about them and they're in a good home, and it's not just some people trying to get a paycheck, it's not going to appear any different, most likely, than the way they're already acting.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. And I just want to mention USA Today, and I put the information inside the chat room. They have a wonderful article where they kind of do the timeline, but I wanted just to read a paragraph under shocking allegations. It says authorities handed down 40 counts, 21 of them felonies, that Sandusky abused 8 boys over a 15-year period starting in 1994. A 2-year grand jury investigation found that Sandusky encountered each of the victims through the Second Mile, the Youth Services Foundation he established in 1977 and remained associated with until a little more than a year ago. And Sean, you know, and I didn't know all this about your background as much as I know you. Sean was my producer, and we worked together on Maryland's Eastern Shore. All of those points that you made are absolutely correct, because if they're exhibiting those kinds of behaviors, especially those type of kids coming from that background, it probably wouldn't even, to some people, I guess, wouldn't even raise a flag. But I think that the thing that really got me when I was reading all of the information, and I had mentioned earlier, by the time, Sean, I got to the fifth page, I literally couldn't go any further. I had to take a break. I was just so angry and just felt like I want to be able to do something, and then I actually continued to read it. But I was saying to my sister before we went on the air tonight, I said, you know, in some cases of molestation and sexual abuse, sometimes I think to some people it could be a gray area. And I told my sister, I said, but, sweetie, in this case, there is no gray area whatsoever. I said, when you
read
those
documents.
Right,
it's not like we're talking about a guy who's, it's like we're talking about a guy who's 19 and he has a 16-year-old girlfriend.
Right,
and
exactly.
her dad doesn't like him and gets pissed off and, you know, files
right.
statutory rape charges.
Yeah, nothing like this, yeah. I mean, and just the, you know, the graphic nature of it is just absolutely, just something, like I said, you just, it's just very, very difficult to actually even wrap your brain around it. But I do want to mention, we've got a lot of people, guys, inside the chat room. Neither of you have never been on my show, but it's all over the U.S. We've got people that listen from the U.K., and also I do a chat room, so there's a lot of people in there talking amongst themselves. So I just want to thank the guests who are here, Michael Kay, Marilyn Bennett, and the sales professional, and everybody else who is tuning in tonight to listen to this conversation. Sean, do you have to leave, or can you stay with us? Are you on deadline for anything?
Oh no, I'm going to be honest.
You're
it's halftime at Carolina, Michigan State. My heels are up, so I'm happy.
Well,
I'm just ticked that Donya Backus is in San Diego, and I think she's at the game tonight. If you remember Donya.
Yes, I do. I do. Donya worked with us on the Eastern Shore. But listen, so you guys are staying. So right now I'm going to bring on the line Stephen Petrella. I think that's how Stephen pronounced his last name. But Stephen, in fact, I don't know. I think, Jerry, you know Robin Dunn. Robin is a friend of mine, and she works for ESPN. And I told her that, you know, I wanted somebody from the university. And I think Stephen was on ESPN, and he's been on a bunch of other shows. So let's bring Stephen on the show, because Stephen was there when they turned the news truck over, and he's a student there, and he can kind of, I think, give us a perspective on what he thinks as well. Stephen, hi, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
So I have Jerry, who's also on the line. He's a sports journalist, and Sean is a television producer out in Utah, and we've been having this conversation since 8 o'clock. So I want to thank you so much for being here. So either one of them may jump in and ask you a question. But first of all, do you write for the newspaper there on campus? You're a reporter?
Yeah, I cover the football team for the student newspaper.
Okay, so the first question that I have to ask you, we already talked about this a little bit, was there, besides the story breaking big for the whole world to know, were there ever any sort of whispers around the campus, the university, about Sandusky and what was taking place over all these years with these boys?
Yeah. It's kind of weird because last semester in the spring, I would say about March or April, there was a report came out about Sandusky, and, you know, it was a big deal at the time, but it was nowhere even close to what is, you know, spiraled out of control at the university at this point. I mean, you know, there was things like, oh, he sexually assaulted kids, you know, it happened. But then this year when the grand jury reports came out, you know, we never expected anything like this. And obviously, even if the players knew about it, which I don't think they did, but if they did know about it, they didn't say anything about it. Everything was under wraps until all this came out. And since it came out, really, the university as a whole has just been, like, thrown for a loop, completely different from anything we've ever seen since we've been here at the student status.
And besides that, I bet you have been very busy with all these shows. So, Jerry or Sean, did you guys have a question that you wanted to ask Stephen?
Yeah, I was curious. You know, there was a report that Jerry Sandusky was working out at the football facility as recently as last week. Did you see him around campus much since that story surfaced last spring when the grand jury investigation was leaked to the Patriot News?
You know, the way the football program works is it's, even before this, very, very limited access. So I cover the football team, but we're not allowed to go to practice. We can't be in the team facilities. So we really didn't get a good sense of if Sandusky was around. And I've heard a lot of reports that he was, which is very, very disturbing, especially through the reports from, you know, March and April came out, which were that he did sexually assault kids. So if he was in the team facilities this semester, which we have heard reports, you know, there's no conclusive evidence, but if it was, that's very disturbing from as a student and as a student journalist, both at the same time.
Sean?
Yeah, I'm just curious. I mentioned this before you were on. One of the things that people out here are so, I guess, taken aback by is the fact that basically people are rioting because they're angry that a man who protected a pedophile was fired. I mean, is that the sentiment of everybody around campus?
It's, you know,
it seems like the whole campus was out there.
From my perspective, the riots are probably the worst thing that students could have done. I think everybody was just, like, real fired up. Like you come to Penn State, and, I didn't come here because Joe Paterno was the head coach of Penn State football. But at the same time, it's cool. The guy's a legend. He's a college football legend. And when you come here, you associate with the football program because it's so big, because everybody loves it. And then when you see your idol, Joe Paterno, just come crashing down like this, you know, it's hard to take in. And I think our perspective as a student, all of our perspectives are a little bit jaded because we're in this bubble that is State College, and we think Joe Paterno can do no wrong. But in this situation, although we don't know all the facts, at this point in time, it seems like Joe Paterno could have done more to stop this. So it's just very upsetting to everyone. And we would love to think that Joe Paterno didn't do anything wrong. But at the same time, there's a very strong feeling that he did. He could have done more to stop Jerry Sandusky. And it's just a real shame how we had to go out, you know.
And
Stephen,
I don't know if maybe
know,
this is...
Go ahead, Sean.
I was just saying, I just picked up on something you said. Is you said he could have, the feeling is he could have done more, not he should have done more, or he was morally obligated to do more and didn't, but he could have done more, whereas in some states, I mentioned this earlier, in a lot of states, he could be facing charges because you're required by law to report anything like this.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, there's been so much speculation. Like, the university policy is you report it to your higher up. So while Joe Paterno is Penn State, he had his higher up. So Tim Curley was his higher up. He reported Tim Curley, and you know, after that, we don't know what happened. For all we know, Paterno could have reported it, Curley could have said it's under investigation, and the investigation could have revealed nothing. But at the same time, if you look at it from the other perspective, Paterno could have reported it, nothing came out of it, and he could have said, you know, there's more we could do, like Sandusky definitely is at fault here, we have to look into this, and he didn't. So at this present time, we don't know the facts, and it's a shame because as a Penn State student, you hate to say this, but it's going to come out eventually. In my personal opinion, there's going to be more details that come out, and it's going to come to the conclusion that Paterno probably could have done more. That's just my guess at this point, but I think more facts are going to come out, and I think that eventually we're going to come to the conclusion that Paterno could have and should have morally done more to stop this.
And, Stephen, let me ask you this question. We do have, as we're on the air, we have questions inside the chat room, and this was something that I had not heard before, but I do want to ask it. You probably best know it because you're right up there where it is. And this is a question that somebody says, is there any more information coming out regarding rumors that Sandusky was pimping out the boys from that from Second Mile? Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, we've heard pretty much all the rumors, and we have heard that. And we've contacted the Second Mile, our student newspaper, and they refused to comment. So we can't really speculate about that situation.
Sure.
But if that's true, I mean, that is ultimately
that's like everybody's head in the world is going to explode, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like you almost like at this point I've like lost faith in the program, the football program and that kind of thing, but if that's true, you almost lose faith in humanity. Like, what? Like,
yeah.
You can't even fathom, like, what is wrong with these people? Like, if that's true, I think, like, and if it is true, it's one of the worst things that can possibly be done to the world. But these powerful, like, supposedly, these powerful people who were, these children were exposed, pimped out to these people. And it's just these people you would never expect, these high executives, people in positions of money and power to be taking advantage of kids is just terrible. And that's the thing that, people are really upset about is, like, how could this go on? And if that's true,
and Steven,
I think...
there is a game tomorrow. There is a game tomorrow. And are all the students still planning on wearing blue for child abuse?
Yeah. And I think that's a tremendous movement because I talked about it yesterday with some people. It's people like the students. We feel for the victims. We're a part of the Penn State community. It's a very tight knit community, and those people who are abused, they are also part of the state college and the Penn State community. So we feel for them, and I feel like the Penn State students are not getting a good rap because people are like, oh, they only care about the football team. They only care about Joe Paterno. But in reality, we do care about these victims, and I think the wearing blue will really show, or at least attempt to show, that we really do care about the victims, and that's a pressing issue that's on all of our minds.
Jerry, you got any other questions for Stephen before we let him go?
No, I think that's admirable what they're going to do. Initially they're going to have, it was called the whiteout, where they all were going to wear white in support of the team and university, but I'm glad they're making that adjustment. And, I just think it's a sad situation. You said that more will come out about Joe Paterno as this goes on, and I think it's going to get uglier. I think the man might face charges, and it's just a sad day for that university. I was talking to a colleague today, and we were saying, what if you had a coworker who you had allegations of this against them? How can you continue for a 13, 14-year period and just interact with that person after these allegations surface? And I just don't understand that aspect about what went on with that football program within the athletic department that allowed this man to continue to come on campus when these allegations came about.
And that's what's, I mean, I 100% agree with you. That's what's such a pressing issue is, like, why was this man allowed to remain on campus? And we don't know all the facts. And as a Penn State student, I want to side with Paterno because he's a guy that everyone at this university looks up to. But at the same time, so many things are pointing towards he could have done more, and so many things are pointing towards why was Jared Sandusky allowed to remain on this campus? Why was he allowed to coach football camps at one of the satellite campuses? It's just everything that's happening is just – it's so shocking to Penn State students that we can't even – we don't want to go against Joe Paterno, but everything that's come out over the last 4 days has just been – like, we don't want to believe it, but it's getting more and more like we have to. And once you look outside the state college bubble, like, you look at the global perspective, is that, Paterno was really, really at fault. And that's what it seems like everyone outside of this town thinks. And the more and more I read, the more and more I kind of start to think, like, wow, he really could have and should have done more to keep this guy off campus and keep this guy, you know, in check. And it's really a shame because as much as I love Joe Paterno and as much as I believe he should have gone on Wednesday and he did, regardless of what you think about whether he should have been fired or not, it's just so sad to see a legend like this go out the way he did. And it's just
I have to say, as a journalist, I don't cover sports. I'm more of a general assignment reporter, but you know, in that respect, it is very sad that somebody's entire career, you know, you do so much and then the end of it, the end result is that you're leaving under something like this. So that, Stephen, I completely agree with you on. Stephen, let me ask you this last question, and I'll let you go. So this has been really good experience for you having to cover this and your work with the newspaper. You should be able to get some job offers out of this soon, right?
I mean, my friends always ask me, they're like, you know, like I did Outside the Lines yesterday, like, oh, is ESPN going to offer you a job? And I just say, like, you know, like, this is a great experience for me, but at the same time, at the cost of what has happened to this university and everyone surrounding it, it's not even close to worth it. I mean, it's just, it's such a shame that Penn State, which has a tremendous reputation outside of the state and I believe across the country, has just been tarnished because of one man and the inaction of a couple people. And it just really is so sad, regardless of, I think, like, for me, this could be the biggest story I've ever covered in my lifetime. Like, in the next 40 years, there might not be a story as big as this, and I've gotten to cover it as a 19-year-old, and that's a tremendous opportunity. But at the same time, it's just so upsetting to think about that. I guess, covering it has been unbelievable. It's been so tiring and so surreal.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I still go to Penn State. I'm still a Penn Stater. And it's just so upsetting to, you know, see all the developments that have happened and to write in my stories former head coach Joe Paterno. That's what most
people
It's unbelievable to think about that when...
Well, listen, we want to thank you so much. So you're kind of our eyes and ears there, and I thank you on short notice for coming on. And as we continue to follow the story, we hope that you come back on at home with Victoria for our listeners and kind of keep us up to date. So Sean and Jerry and I, thank you so much for hanging out with us a bit on the show tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem.
Thank you so much. And Jerry, you know, it's interesting, and Sean, listening to even Stephen talk, because I guess it is sort of a mixed bag of feelings, because, you know, if you're a student there, everybody loves Paterno, but then you've got to take a look at what the allegations are, and I think trying to weigh that and balance that and wrap that stuff around in your brain, I imagine that must be really hard.
It's got to be. They worship that man out in Penn State. You know, there are statues of him around campus. It's almost like a king-like status. And to see someone with that much power for so many years fall, I'm sure it's a shock to everyone up there. But it's something that, based on what's been reported, just had to happen. You know, and Paterno, he was a little cocky this week. It seemed like when it all broke over the weekend that he felt like he was going to walk away from the job under his own terms. Said, you know what, I'm going to coach till the end of the year, and then I'll walk away. But the Board of Trustees came out as a voice of reason and said, no, you're no longer in charge of dictating what goes on here because, you know, you had a chance to do something that was right years ago and you didn't do it. So I'm glad they made that move and not let him walk away and get that final game at Penn State. The story was too big to allow him to do something just for the sake of football and finishing the season.
Yeah, I agree with you. Great last word. Sean, any sort of last thoughts as we end out the show?
Well, I think it was interesting. We actually interviewed Lavelle Edwards yesterday, who's BYU's coach. He's kind of BYU's Joe Paterno. You know, won a national championship in 1984, coached BYU for 30-some years, and actually is pretty good friends with Coach Paterno from what he told us. And one of the things he said that I thought was really interesting was, you know, based on what he's heard, he wouldn't feel comfortable with one of his kids playing at Penn State.
Interesting. And
for another, you know, coach who's, you know, on the same level as Coach Paterno to say that, I think really says, you know, how serious it is, and, you know, it just kind of sums it up. I mean, it's just a sad state. I think, you know, the whole situation is really just, it's just sad, and I feel really bad especially for the kids, because I think a lot of cases, you know, we're losing sight of, you know, all these victims and all these victims that are probably going to come forward too, in the future. You know, they have something that they got to deal with for the rest of their lives because of this, and you know, that's something I wouldn't wish really on anybody. So, you know, I just think, you know, we should all keep the victims in our thoughts and our prayers or whatever, you know, send out good thoughts, good karma, whatever it is that you believe in, you know, take some time to send that out for them.
And speaking of taking time, thank you so much, Sean, for taking the time. Sean is a television producer and good friend of mine. He used to be my producer, and I won't have him tell any stories about me when we worked together when I was a news anchor. So on that note, Sean, I think I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for being here tonight. I appreciate it, love.
No problem, Vic. Good to talk to you.
You too. And, Jerry, before you go, I actually know that you wrote something about Joe Frazier passing away, and I didn't want you to get away without mentioning something about that, because I know you've covered him as well.
Yeah, you know, Joe Frazier was such a great boxer. It was a commentary I did for WIPR earlier this week, and basically saying that it was unfortunate that Joe Frazier, it was a gift and a curse that Joe Frazier fought in the era of Muhammad Ali, a gift in that Muhammad Ali allowed him to bring out the best of his ability as a boxer, and a curse in that he was always going to be overshadowed by such a great champion, a guy who's considered one of the best fighters of all time. I had a chance to meet Joe Frazier about 4 or 5 years ago. I was in Philadelphia. A buddy of mine was being interviewed for a documentary, and we decided to just roll up to the gym. And we went to the gym and started looking around, and a woman invited us upstairs. And lo and behold, Joe Frazier was living at the gym. He had an apartment there. And we sat down with him for about 90 minutes and spoke about the Ali fights and his bitterness towards Ali. But he was just such a great guy. And I saw him 2 months ago at the Black Journalist Convention in Philadelphia, and he was in a wheelchair, and I didn't know at the time, but apparently he was diagnosed with cancer earlier this year. So it's just unfortunate because he was such a great fighter, and I just don't think he ever got the proper respect that he deserved because of the era that he came in as a boxer.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and I can agree with you on that point because my brother, who's is a big fan, when we had the conversation, was saying the same thing. Jerry, also, did they ever get a chance to post your story that you did today?
The story is posted. I sent you a link to the story from my website, but I will send you a link as well.
I got
from the WIPR website has the story as well. So it's the radio commentary I did on the Penn State situation.
Yeah, so if you guys want to hear more about Jerry's thoughts and what he thinks, I will post that in the chat room and also on my wall. And Jerry actually posted it on my wall, too, but I will do that again. Hey, listen, I so appreciate you taking the time, especially on a Friday at 8 o'clock, to come on and do this. And from what I can tell inside the chat room, all the information in your conversation was great because everybody loves you there, but then I knew that anyway. So.
Okay, thanks a lot, Victoria, for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much. And, again, I want to thank all of you guys for taking the time to be. Sorry, I am not taking any calls tonight. I have got to get off the air here and then head and go work on another project. But I want to thank my good friend Marilyn Bennett, who I just love, love, love so much. Marilyn is a friend and also a big supporter of At Home with Victoria. Michael Kay, if Michael is actually out there and he's listening, it would be great. I've got about 5 more minutes, MK, on the show, so it would be great if you can call in, because we had actress Jeannie Francis on At Home with Victoria yesterday. Michael was a little bit giddy because he had the chance to talk to her after the show was over, and I just kind of wanted to take the couple of minutes that we had left over to mention that. So if entertainment co-host Michael Kay is out there listening, would be great if you would call in. Looks like Progressive ELEC, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Black Achievement USA, I don't know if he is still here or she and left the chat room. Thank you so much for being with us, and also all of the guests. So if this was your first time listening to At Home with Victoria, I want to thank you so much. We basically do entertainment, news, and information, but we heavily focus the shows on nonprofits and community organizations that are really out there across the U.S. Doing their best to provide wonderful services and things for their community. So with that said, I'll bring entertainment co-host Michael Kay into the conversation. Hi, MK. Thank you for hanging out with me tonight and being here.
My absolute pleasure. That was a very informative show. It was a hell of a week to take off from news. But, you know, that's the one thing I love about us, Victoria. I can always trust you to find and keep me abreast of what's happening. Quite a scandal. While the show was going on, I was Googling and Binging and finding out all the information. And, yes, it's absolutely tragic what's been going on in Penn State. But I don't think there should be a question.
And you know too what I love about what we're able to do here at Home with Victoria are the top notch guests that I'm able to get. If you don't know anything about Jerry, and his last name is spelled BEMBRY, his information is inside the chat. But you should Google him because he's pretty big. I mean, Jerry has covered sports in Baltimore, D.C. Like, you know, he's one of the top people in his field. Sean is a pretty big television producer as well. He's had a tremendous career in producing. And I was very, very fortunate to get Steven on tonight through my friend Robin Dunn. Robin works at ESPN, and I emailed her and say, hey, this is who I'm looking for, and she was able to get Steven. So it was very, you know, it was very good having a perspective from Steven, who's a student at Penn State. But not only that, his first kind of quote-unquote real job covering a major event like this. So I'm sure something that he will never, ever forget. But switching subjects, so Jeannie Francis was on last night. She loved us and loved the show. So tell everybody kind of briefly what happened after the show was over.
Well, it's a funny story, actually, because I call all of our entertainment guests directly after the show just to go ahead and thank them and to see if they had fun, to kind of, you know, maintain that bond. Sometimes they call back, sometimes they don't, and everything like that. So I mustered up all of my courage to go ahead and call because I had her number and stuff, and I thought, well, I'm just going to call and thank her anyways because I would do that for anybody. So I called her up. Left a message saying, you know, we had a great time with you, hope you had fun, and, you know, consider coming back, and yada, yada, yada. So I'm sitting there, and as I get up from, I finish the call, I get up, and I refresh my Chardonnay glass, and I sit back down, the phone rings, and it's actually Jeannie Francis. And Jeannie was absolutely so very grateful that we took the time with her to ask her the questions that we did. She enjoys us. She thinks the show is fantastic. She loves the live chat interaction. And quite frankly, you know what? She's just a lovely little thing. So we had about, I don't know, probably about a 30-minute conversation about what she was doing and, you know, apart from the show and everything. But, yeah, she's delicious, and she asked if she could come back. And I said, well, of course you can, darling. I mean, it's never a worry with that. But, yeah, it was great to go ahead and chatter with her in her non-professional mode. So I was blown away and kind of walking on air all night. So it was a very good night.
Well, and I know that you were because we chatted about it this morning, so I just thought it was worth you coming back on for a few minutes tonight just to talk about that. So if you're new to At Home with Victoria, and I noticed that we have a lot of guests, Michael and I generally do our shows Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So, again, Friday tonight was an exception because of the Penn State. I was just so livid as a human being over that I was able to quickly get that great guest list tonight and have those guys on the show to actually – talk about it. But MK, I want to thank you so much. I'm getting obsessed with Kobe. Today's his birthday, so kisses and happy birthday. But I think I'm gonna play Kobe again tonight. I'm obsessed
you
with that
got
song.
It.
What
got
more
it.
Can
you
I
have,
say?
You have a great night.
All right, love you, darling. Thank you so much. And again, thank you everybody who took the time to listen tonight. Our next show, I think it's either next Wednesday or Thursday. But we appreciate your time, and this is Kobe Cole. Happy birthday. Today is Kobe's birthday.
would do anything. Anything you'd say, if you would just be mine. What more can I say? Do anything, anything you say, if you would just be mine. What more can I say? Is not a lot to give. Baby, if I'm giving it to you, anything that's nice to give, I don't have to think twice to give. That's how much I love you, Daddy. That's how much I love you. I said that's how much I love you. That's how much I love you. One more can I say?
You have been listening to At Home with Victoria, a popular news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Plus, download the show on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. Tune in again next time for At Home with Victoria with your host, Victoria Gaither.